Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Monday Squawker Talker. My name is Nick English and we have got an incredible amount of Premier League stuff to cover off. We're just going to talk Premier League today because there's that much that happened. And joining me to help out in this endeavour is Liam Toomey from ESPN FC. Hello Liam.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. It's good to have you. And your sparring mate, James Bench from the Evening Standards, also
yeah,
here.
Yeah, good to be back. We're back together very quickly.
Yeah,
aren't we?
The chemistry was so good last week.
So strong.
We were actually going to have Mo as well as a third.
We cut him.
The exact, but yeah, he's unfortunately unwell. Oh, we cut him. Yeah, that's it.
He's here, but we're going to edit everything he says.
Yeah.
We're literally sparring distance as well.
Yeah, so yeah you are. Yeah,
it makes
yeah,
things easier.
There's a reach battle there. Liverpool 3, Everton 1, Merseyside Derby. Liam, it's Klopp's third Derby win in a row. He's the first manager to win his first three. Liverpool haven't lost to Everton at Anfield since the year 2000. It was a fairly dominant performance in the end. It looked like those injuries from the international break really hurt Everton. They really struggled to keep up with Liverpool.
Yeah, this game came at a bad time, didn't it? I feel like Liverpool always seem to play up to their role as the kind of big brothers in this rivalry every time, particularly when these two teams meet at Anfield. They just outplayed Everton, really. Mm. I mean, Everton's key players, Barkley and Lukaku, were very much peripheral. Mm. And instead it was, you know, Coutinho probably had the most influence on the game.
Yeah. James, Philippe Coutinho, when he's on, isn't he?
What a wonderful performance that was. I mean, the was it the second goal, the one he scored? I know that young Matt Pennington got a lot of criticism for that, but I mean, I was watching it and all I had to do was watch it and I wasn't really sure what Coutinho was doing, but then you're like, oh, he scored, he's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was just him summed up today. I mean, good choice by Liverpool, getting him in that private jet as quickly as possible. He's fantastic, and it's been a while since he's hit that sort of form, yeah. I think it'd be fair to say. And I think Liverpool have really suffered because of that. I think if they'd had a Coutinho firing on all form, on all cylinders this season, they might be really quite close to Chelsea.
I mean, his talent ceiling is ridiculous, because if you imagine he plays like he did yesterday, like he was playing earlier in the season, he could definitely be player of the year, one of the best players in Europe, potentially.
Yeah, you keep getting taken back by the fact he's 24, 25, I'm not sure exactly how old, but he plays with such maturity, such a land. He's playing like a player who's been at the heart of a top side for 5 or 6 years, and there's so much he can improve on as well. If he can just get the consistency right, he's one of the top players in the world. I do wonder if he'll ever find that at Liverpool. But I mean, when Real Madrid and Barcelona come calling, which they eventually will, he'll go on to just star at those clubs.
Yeah. Liam, sorry, go on.
Well, consistency is the only thing missing from his game at the moment. And I think Liverpool really needed him to step up, especially when Mane got his injury, given how big he's been for them. But yeah, I think he performs a really particularly valuable role in this Liverpool team, because while they've got a lot of very fast, direct attackers in that sort of front four, front six, he's one of the few that are really, really adept at committing his man. And that's such a valuable skill in the modern game, especially when you're up against, you know, set defences. I know Everton weren't necessarily the most set defence of the weekend, but I was actually just as impressed with his assist as his goal.
It's a wonderful
ball. For Origi, yeah. I thought the step over to create the space and then the pass was fantastic.
His opposite number, Ross Barkley, has been in fantastic form recently, but was just a walking liability for Everton. Should have been sent off twice, probably. Well, Barkley seems to be one of those players that, again, consistency is the issue, but he has a real nasty streak. Because in the first Merseyside derby, he absolutely obliterated Jordan Henderson, put him out for the game. He's got a bit of a temper on him, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I also feel that another element to this is, I mean, we spoke last week about the Neil Taylor, Seamus Coleman thing, and it comes back to certain games with a certain atmosphere, players going into them with expectations that they have to act differently. And I think particularly with Barkley, because he's the hometown kid, a bit like Gerrard used to feel when Liverpool used to play Manchester United, you have to go in and steam into tackles and get the crowd going. And, you know, you feel a particular responsibility as the symbol of your half of the city to really make a mark. And I think he went out and did it in the wrong way. He made a mark on
Dejan Lovren's ankle
on Dejan Lovren.
He's the antithesis of a big game player. I don't obviously watch Everton all that regularly, but whenever I do see him in a big match, he goes missing. And you know, you see all this talk of Tottenham and Manchester City. The reality is, I don't know why you'd be spending that money on him, because, you know, when the chips are down like they were for Everton, you know, yesterday, and a win could have been huge for their season, could really have put them in the race for the top six. When the chips are down, Barkley was a liability for Everton. It would have been better for them to have 10 men than to have Ross Barkley on the pitch.
Another player who got a lot of criticism, James, was Romelu Lukaku. Amusing stat from the game was he completed as many take-ons during the game as Simon Mignolet, which is never a stat you want to be on the wrong end of. But he was really anonymous. Lovren and Matip kept him so quiet.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what was wrong with Lukaku there, because, I mean, he's not someone you would hold that Barkley standard to. He's not someone that always struggles in the big games, particularly loves playing against Chelsea, if I remember rightly. But yeah, I think, you know, sometimes they just have off days. You know, he's still a fantastic striker, but he couldn't really get anything clicking. It wasn't helped that he didn't really have much sort of maturity or you know, experience alongside him. Calvert-Lewin and Barkley, you know, there's a lot of pressure suddenly then on Lukaku. Why wouldn't they play Morales?
Is there a bit of a service issue with Lukaku? He seems to get much more criticism than any other 20-goal-a-season striker that we've seen in the Premier League. I was listening to the commentary on Five Live, and Pat Nevin was being absolutely scathing of Lukaku, which is surprising given his Chelsea ties. Chelsea set up to defend. Would we really need to expect that much from Lukaku? Was he genuinely that poor?
Well, I've heard Pat Nevin describe Lukaku as lazy before. I know he has serious doubts about Lukaku's work rate. I think the reason why he generally gets a lot more criticism is because he's such a dominating physical athlete that even when he's not getting great service, which I don't think he generally gets good service against good teams because good teams know how to shut Everton down. But he's so overwhelming in a one-on-one situation that I think people should expect him to create more on his own for himself. And I think that's probably the final step towards him becoming a genuine world-class player. I thought he missed a big opportunity against Liverpool, because if you look at what he's been saying in recent months, or read between the lines of what he's been saying about his Everton future, he's clearly eyeing bigger things this summer. Quite possibly Chelsea. And if he really has designs on replacing Diego Costa at Stamford Bridge, he needs to use games like that to prove that he's capable of filling those boots, because Diego Costa has proven time and again that he can win games against top teams.
Well, he's got another chance in midweek. Everton are going to Old Trafford. Lukaku's had fun there before. A chance for him to redeem himself? I mean, United have got got a bit of goal-scoring issues themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Lukaku could go into that game, and Everton could go into that game knowing that if they score once, they might win, given the way United are playing. Like I said, I think in the big games they have left, he really has to use that as a stage to show, to really sell himself to the top clubs in Europe, but particularly to Chelsea, who are probably going to be leading the chase for him this summer.
Yeah, it's midweek action this week. Should have mentioned that. Liverpool have got Bournemouth, so we can expect goals, James.
What was it? It was the 4-3 last time. And I'm sure Liverpool will be keen to get one over on them. But it's just the sort of game that they struggle in, really, against a team that they're expected to cruise past with some ease. I think this would be a good way of Jurgen Klopp. I think this is a good way of getting a read on whether Klopp's men can actually get in the top four. I still have my doubts. I think these are the games that will show whether they're a team that are capable of getting in the Champions League place. 3 points here, and that becomes a lot more likely.
A lot easier. Every game's important now. What is it? 11 left?
They've got eight. Arsenal have got two games in hand on them. The rest have all got one, I think.
This season has flown by. The leaders, Chelsea, Liam, unexpected 2-1 loss to Crystal Palace.
Very much so.
At home. Chelsea had 24 shots in the game and attempted 42 crosses. Was it just one of those games? Costa was rubbish at finishing in that game, seemingly. Just couldn't put the ball in the net.
Yeah, and he also had a problem with, I think there were quite a few moments where teammates were left looking at him going, why didn't you make that run?
Mm.
You know, which was similar to what was happening in the midst of the Mourinho crisis last year.
The ball seemed to keep being driven across into that famous corridor of uncertainty. I'm doing inverted commas with my fingers. And Diogo Costa was never there to apply the finish.
Yeah, there were several occasions where he would actually run into areas where other Chelsea players already were, rather than running into the space to attack just behind the defender or maybe trying to get across a centre-back. It was one of those games to a large extent. Chelsea dominated all but 3 minutes and managed to lose, because I feel like this season, especially since September, October, Chelsea have been sort of insulated from the reality that the Premier League sometimes just kicks you in the teeth.
Mm.
And any team on any given day can do it. Chelsea have won a lot of those close games, or they've at least avoided defeat in a lot of those close games in recent months. But Palace were really on it. I think scoring after 5 minutes probably didn't help Chelsea, actually, because it gave them a false impression of how difficult the afternoon was going to be. Palace very quickly turned it around. Zaha and Benteke were both sensational.
They
created chance after chance. It was almost Moyes-esque with the number of crosses.
It was unbelievable, the going number of balls they were
in the second half. Yeah, I mean, it was a recurring pattern at Stamford Bridge of Conte just turning around, throwing his arms up in frustration and looking at his bench to say, what do we need to do? You know,
does this game put a different perspective on the title race? Because Chelsea didn't play badly, did they? You were in the press box. Were people sort of going, oh, this could be a little tilt in the title race? Or
I think the consensus was that it's made things very interesting, and that was put to Conte after the match, and he admitted as much. He said, it's more interesting for you, not necessarily for me.
I think
Chelsea would prefer it to be boring. But yeah, if the midweek results go the right way, I mean, Chelsea are very capable, well, City are very capable of beating Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, and Tottenham win their game, it's down to 4 points. And then it's still a big advantage at this point in the season, but it's at least a conversation, which it wasn't even before this weekend.
Yeah. Little name drop. Liam was sitting next to Garth Crooks at the press box. We all want to sit next to Garth Crooks. Garth, if you're listening, please come on the pod. I'd love to sit next to you. Massive 3 points for Big Sam.
Yeah, huge.
They're up to 16th now. How have they done that?
We were all doubting Allardyce, and I think in our office a few weeks ago, we were all, the consensus was Palace are gone. Because their league schedule from this game onwards kind of looked pretty horrible. But I think it looks like Allardyce has probably done enough that they're all but safe now. He's done so well that, you know, that they can feel like these last games, they don't need to do that much to guarantee their safety. And it's the same trick as it was at Bolton, the same trick as it was at Sunderland. Took a little while to get going, but like the signings he's made.
Mamadou Sakho has been imperious.
Mamadou, he's got a 30-40 million pound centre back for a million pound loan fee. I don't think they'll be able to keep him in the summer, because I think any side in Europe would be mad not to be having a look at Sakho on the basis of how he's playing at Palace. But also Milivojevic, he looks a fantastic Allardyce sort of Makaleli style role player, the sort of player that Allardyce loves. I know Van Aanholt's been out injured, but a great player to have a left back. He's made some solid signings. He's got Townsend defending. That, I think, is his crowning achievement.
Miraculous.
His career. Andros Townsend tracks back now.
He's getting the best out of Zaha as well, who's been very, very tidy recently.
Wilf is just absolutely brilliant. I've been saying this all season. Because he plays for Palace, he doesn't get the credit he deserves. But you know, there are a few players I enjoy watching as much as Wilf. He always just is running at defenders. He's always making them make a decision. I mean, you know, his contribution for both of Palace goals was was outstanding. Bit of luck maybe on his goal that Courtois was unsighted as it went through his legs. But, I mean, whatever happens with Wilfred, and I know there's a lot of reports now that he's going to be earning 100 grand a week at Palace. Mm. They'd be mad not to offer him that. But I think he's really moved on from those struggles at Man United. And is outside of the sort of big six, he's one of the best players in the league.
Palace have got Saints next. Pretty winnable, actually, yeah, given that they can't score goals at the moment without Gabbiadini.
Saints can't score goals. Palace can't concede them. That was the first... the Fabregas goal is the only one they've conceded in the last four games. Mm. Benteke looks like he's getting back to his best.
That
like
chip was magnificent.
Brilliant finish.
Tasty. Yeah.
What a... You know, that's Benteke of Villa, Benteke of old. And it's great to see him back because he was rubbish for a while.
He was.
But yeah, I mean, you've got to say Palace have really turned it around and... Didn't see it happening, but looks like they're going to stay up.
Liam, Chelsea, meanwhile, host Man City in midweek. Mm. So, I mean, that again could be a potential banana skin, to talk in cliches, for Conte. And then, as you said before, we're maybe looking at a very different title race. Do you think Pep's men have what it takes to upset Chelsea? Last time these two, the two teams played, it was definitely one-sided towards City, but Chelsea's counter-attacking was unbelievable. Hazard had one of the games of the season.
Yeah, absolutely, and I wouldn't rule out this game playing out the same way, but City certainly will come to Stamford Bridge very, very confident of scoring. Mm. Chelsea, you know, after the switch to 3-4-3, they kept 10 clean sheets in 12 games. Since then, it's been only two clean sheets in the last 11. Mm. So they've been steadily getting easier and easier to score against, and City are one of the most talented attacking teams in the league. Mm. The difference, I think the key thing for City will be if they can keep Chelsea out. Mm. We saw against Arsenal their own vulnerabilities on that front. So if Chelsea can get out of that game with a draw, I think, in the general context of the season, then they'll probably be reasonably happy.
Probably be worried about Raheem Sterling versus Gary Cahill. Gary Cahill really looks like the weak link in that Chelsea team at the moment.
Well, he's usually been well protected in that system. There's always a covering defender with that back three, and Luiz behind him has done well. It was funny to see the uncertainty that was sown just by the absence of Victor Moses, actually. Most of the problems came from the other side with Pedro there against Zaha. That was pretty ugly at times. just having a change of wing back made that back three, which has been so settled since September, suddenly looks so uncertain. I'd actually, if I were Chelsea, I'd be more worried about Sane. I think he's been superb.
Sensational. Absolutely sensational on Saturday. But really, really gave Bellerin the most torrid time he's had in 18 months. I know Hector's struggling, but yeah, absolutely exceptional. I don't know if Raheem Sterling will be kept on. Pep bizarrely was like, I fancy bringing on Yaya Toure for this game. What this game needs is an injection of lumbering, not even much physicality anymore.
Lumbering ball retention.
Yeah, and that really killed City's attacking game. But yeah, I'd love to see Sterling and Sané up against Pedro and Marcus Alonso would be a feast.
Yeah, feast for the eyes. Speaking of Arsenal, Man City, 2-2, but the real story, as always with Arsenal this season, is not on the pitch. Fights in the stadium, fights outside the stadium, buses, banners, megaphones. James, what on earth is going on?
I wish I knew. It's a strange world you're living in when Claude from Arsenal Fan TV is the voice of reason, solely because he's saying, it'd be best if fans weren't punching each other in the face. It's got beyond sort of parody now. Yeah. Last week we had planes. We've got automobiles. We had automobiles with the van. So there'll be a train soon.
Train next, yeah.
Yeah, I think they go up to Stoke.
That was overground.
The scene of the famous Joel Campbell while you can rant. So that one's in the pipeline. Obviously, we don't see all of this in the press box. We don't see the fighting and everything. Yeah. But you do sense the atmosphere, and there's something so weird going on. The fans are at each other's throats.
A lot of empty seats as well at the game.
Amazing for a game like that. Actually, the fans that were there made a really creditable atmosphere. It was one of the better Emirates atmospheres I've seen in recent months. But there's just so much indifference to what's going on now at Arsenal. That or there's a sort of rabid fury that's being aimed not even really at Wenger but just at each other. You go on Twitter and the Arsenal fans are at each other's throats. I just find it so odd. If you don't want to protest, just ignore the protesters. if you don't want Wenger to sign a new contract, just ignore the people that are the holding up banners. I mean, I actually think there's a, quite a lot of consensus among Arsenal fans, bar a sort of slightly mad 5%. I think they're all of the opinion that they'd rather Arsene Wenger didn't sign a new contract, that they think it's time to move on from Arsene Wenger. The only real debate seems to be they're a group that have, are quite open about the fact they will hound him out and they will do whatever it takes to get rid of him. You know, I talked to some of these guys and I know they get a bad write-up, but they believe in what they're doing. I don't agree with it in the slightest, but it's up to them. You know, as Arsene Wenger himself says, they take responsibility for their actions. Barring that, everyone else seems to be in agreement, yet their response is, let's just punch each other in the face. It's quite
astonishing for a club like Arsenal, which is so often derided as being, you know, well, just sort of lackadaisical prawn sandwich brigade. I mean, Liam, you're at Stamford Bridge every other week. It's not the sort of thing that's generally associated with Arsenal Football Club, is it? And a lot of people saying, oh, look, Arsene, look at what you're doing to the club. The fans are fighting with each other. But this is just a bunch of idiots, isn't it, really?
It's bizarre. I mean, particularly given the atmosphere at Chelsea this season, it's like looking into a parallel universe. It's really, really surreal. I think this is starting to get... I mean, it's been funny for a long time.
It's been bubbling.
But it's starting to get slightly worrying because we're living in an age, I think, in football and in life where hysteria just seems to feed hysteria and it just things spiral out of control quicker than ever. And it's just quite disturbing to see fans getting so worked up about essentially a contract issue.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, it's clearly, I think most Arsenal fans would be happy if Wenger left. The level of respect they still hold for him varies wildly, but I think most Arsenal fans at this stage are agreed on that. But the manner in which some of these points are being made, they vary from the ridiculous to the slightly disturbing.
I don't know if you've seen the manifesto, and it's a manifesto of the No New Contract movement.
I have, yes.
Number 7 on their manifesto is to email any of the club's sponsors, so Citroen, Betfair, blah, 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 blah. I think they've got a washing machine sponsor.
Yes.
They're not on Man United levels, but they're getting there. With a customer complaint, and then at the bottom to hashtag it, hashtag Wenger out, hashtag no new contract, which I think is remarkable. I don't know how much power the guys at Citroen had, but apparently they can be like, look, this guy's having a problem with his Citroen C3, but also he says no new contract. Do we know about that no new? Someone ring Ivan Gazidis and let him know.
Can we do something about this?
This customer would really like it.
Yeah. It would be a fitting end to this entire saga if the straw that broke the camel's back was the official noodle partner walking away.
Yeah, that would be the one that walk away from. Think about Arsenal might finish as low as sixth.
It's humiliation, isn't it?
It's tragic. The sixth best
team
in the country.
The fans of Leighton Orient and Charlton just don't understand how hard it is.
Yeah, they have no idea. I mean, James, you're in the press pack. You rub shoulders with the great Arsenal journalist. We're talking John Cross. We're talking David Ornstein. You're right there with them. Well, generally, the press obviously have, you know, there's obviously the rumours, and I know there's a lot of stuff that you guys know that can't even be discussed, but what's the feeling amongst the press pack? Or is it genuinely they have no idea what's going on?
It's pretty obvious, isn't it? He's going to sign a new contract. It's abundantly clear. I mean, you ask him a question about it, and he gets all flirtatious about it. Like, oh, you'll know when I tell you.
Yeah.
You know, and when will you tell us? I'll decide when I'll tell you. But he's crystal clear that he wants to stay. So it basically comes down to, do you believe that the Arsenal board are really going to withdraw the 2-year contract on offer?
How much would you bet on Arsene Wenger being at Arsenal next season?
I don't have very much money, so that would be the slight problem there. But
how much of a percentage of your actual...
8-9% of my overall wealth.
There we go. You heard overall. It. 10p on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Talking about the game, draw was fair, Liam? Would you say a draw was fair? Neither team seemed particularly keen to put in a big performance in a big game.
Yeah, I think a draw was fair. It looked like in the first 20-30 minutes there was a serious risk of another Arsenal crumble. They set up with an insane tactical plan, just so much space in between the lines. Well, it's probably wrong to call it a tactical plan, but there was so much space through the middle of the pitch, which you seem to see now every time Arsenal play a very competent, talented team. It's just they just run straight through the middle of the pitch. And
yes.
That was how Sané scored the first goal. It looked like City had a sort of 2-on-2, 3-on-3 every time they attacked. And in the end, they paid for not making the most of that spell, I think, because once Arsenal got back into it, City showed the vulnerabilities that have undermined their season as well, which is that you can't depend on them defensively.
Yeah, Pep Guardiola kept saying, said twice after the game, his team aren't very good at winning 1-0 or leading 1-0, which I guess is a plan for Chelsea, is let them score early because then you'll win.
Yeah.
But it did seem like City were brilliant whenever the game was tied, but then as soon as they got in front, they kind of just threw it all away and they had no ability to control the game. Which was almost understandable because they didn't actually, they had one defensive midfielder or one, you know, anchor who would pick the ball up. But there were so many odd things about Arsenal's tactical plan, particularly in the first half. The sort of refusal to press that back line that we know can be forced into mistakes, and they showed can be forced into mistakes in the second half. They just kind of let John Stones do his John Stonesy thing and ping the ball around. It all really changed in the second half. There was an upping of the intensity that I think came with moving Sanchez to centre forward, where he should have been from the off. But even he didn't look quite right. I know it's a trope to see it, but there was one moment where he gave the ball away in his own half and just kind of stood there, hands on hips, looking like a fabulous diva, absolutely fuming. And then another moment where he was like, I'll just back heel to Theo Walcott on the overlap on the edge of his own box.
He does like doing that, grabbing the ball near his own penalty area and then trying to dribble everyone.
Someone should explain to him that you can pass the ball to a player other than Mesut Ozil.
Yeah.
You do know that.
Yeah. He's definitely the kid at school who's like, that's the other good footballer. Yeah. I'm the best one. He's the other good one.
Yeah.
I'll give him the ball.
He might have a point.
Although Ozil's 71% pass accuracy, not amazing. Arsenal have West Ham next at home. The reverse fixture of this was really weird. Arsenal were awful and won 3-0.
5-1.
What? 5-1. Sorry, I apologise. But yeah, they played awful and won 5-1. Yeah. It was a very, very strange game. Do you expect similar things before? West Ham look a bizarre team to watch this season.
I think this could be another very weird game. It'll be a weird atmosphere from an Arsenal perspective, but you've just seen the vote of confidence that Slaven Bilic has got, which probably means he's got about a week or two to get some good results and give some semblance of hope that West Ham can go in the right direction again. It's a difficult one between two teams that seem to have quite a toxic atmosphere around them, a lot of negativity and very little optimism. So I think Arsenal should win. Yeah.
The lovely stadiums.
Can't complain about the stadiums.
Around those
so
clubs.
Silver.
Yeah. Go on.
I was going to say, I think Arsenal will win this really comfortably because you just look at this, that West Ham defence. James Collins and whoever else, like Jose Font, not the most explosive of centre-back pairings. I think Alexis Sanchez might have a lot of fun against them.
Two very generous teams, aren't they, defensively?
Yeah. They're teams that let you play.
Yeah, that's the best thing about it. Speaking about upcoming shiny stadiums, Tottenham with another win. They beat Burnley away from home. A 2-0 win, but many injuries. Wanyama and Winks out. Winks looks particularly bad, James. He looks like he might be out for the season.
Yeah, I think that's Tottenham's fears, is that he's out for the season, which is a horrible blow. He's been doing so well. And with losing Wanyama, those numbers are really down. Sissoko had to play. That's how tough things are getting. And he looked dreadful.
Yeah.
He looked really dreadful.
Predictably.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know why anyone would spend £30 million on him. But I think this could be kind of, as much as it felt like a fantastic weekend at the time for cutting that gap to Chelsea, I still fancy them to win in Swansea. I think if Wanyama also turns out to be a long-term absentee, then you know that whole side is built so much on the solidity that the Wanyama, Dembele, or Winks, and one of those two bring. I think losing that could be as big as losing Kane for them because that midfield is huge and it's just impossible to get past.
Well, their midfield options are now Dier, Dembele, and Eriksen can play there, and obviously Sissoko, Liam. I mean, they've got Swansea next, who, if anything, look like one of the better teams in the bottom half of the table in midfield. It is a huge issue because Dembele always turns up. Eric Dier hasn't looked good in midfield for a while. Eriksen can't really hold at all. It's a real problem area for them, especially the way Pochettino plays.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Pochettino's style is all about intensity, and that's built around a very muscular and athletic midfield. And if they don't have the personnel, I think Dier might be required to play in defence again. So you're getting into an issue of balancing the team. There could be an element of a Pyrrhic victory to this one. It was an excellent result. Mm. I mean, no big team has looked good at Turf Moor this season. So for Tottenham to win there so convincingly was really good. But they have a very favourable run of fixtures. Mm-hmm. I still remain to be convinced that they can find the goals in every game without Kane. Mm-hmm. I think every game they go without him, they'll feel his absence more. And, you know, we'll see whether they can turn this into a genuine title race.
We were saying a few months back, and I think it's becoming true again, that Tottenham just haven't provided the squad for Mauricio Pochettino to compete on multiple fronts. And obviously they're out of the Europa League, but the reality is they get hit by a few injuries, and it's, oh, Dyer might have to move into midfield. Well, that means we have to put Kevin Vimmer in at centre-back, and we know that Pochettino doesn't trust Vimmer. At full-back, they look fine. Davis and Trippier have been very good cover, but again, Vincent Janssen did not look very impressive. Mm. There's just so few options once that first choice 11 starts falling apart. Mm. You look at that Tottenham team and you think, I really think a normal average Premier League team could get at that.
I mean, Pochettino has been very clear that he doesn't trust certain players. Yeah. So when it does come to the fact that he has to play them, is that a bit of mismanagement on his part? I mean, he's clearly one of the best managers in the league tactically and motivationally, but I mean, I'm not sure, you know, Vimmer and Janssen feel especially trusted.
I think you're spot on there. I think...
Thanks, mate.
Yeah. You're welcome. I think it's... how can it possibly help your confidence if you know that your manager doesn't trust you? I mean, the extent to which Pochettino tries sort of various tactical solutions to keep Kevin Vimmer out of the side is a pretty damning... As soon as Alderweireld and Vertonghen started feeling it a bit, it was like, oh, let's play back three. Anything to keep you away from the pitch, Kevin. And, you know, Janssen was the kind of most... must have been the most begrudging start that Pochettino has ever handed out. Sissoko, he's been calling out since November. Mm. I mean, you wonder if those players, you know, I'm sure they'll be eager to prove Pochettino wrong. That's the bright side of it. Mm. But I wouldn't be feeling that confident that my manager backs me to go and do a job.
Liam, Burnley are sort of slowly creeping towards relegation. Crystal Palace are just 2 points behind, I think, but they've got a game in hand. Is there a danger for Dyche Spence? They've got Stoke next, who are again another ridiculously unpredictable side. Mm. Should Burnley fans be worried, do you reckon? I mean, their home form still pretty exceptional, but, you know, away from home they have their struggles. What do you think?
I think all of the bottom six, bottom seven, if you're still in that conversation, I think you should still be a little bit worried, even if you're towards the top end of that group. Burnley do have a good home record. I think this was more of an aberration of the way Tottenham played. But I think they're organised enough, and Sean Dyche has done such a good job of maximising the talent at his disposal that I think they'll cobble enough points together. Yeah. And the teams below them, you'd have to say Sunderland are already gone. Mm. Middlesbrough look very likely to follow because they just can't score goals. So I think there's only really one spot that Burnley could fall into, and I think they'll fancy their chances of not being that team.
Okay, we'll have to keep an eye on that. Man United 0, West Brom 0. Liam, Man United can't score without Ibra. They just can't do it. The goals have completely gone from this side.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, funnily enough, that's kind of been a running theme of Ibrahimovic's career, hasn't it? You can't really put him in the team without gearing everything around him, and then the whole team suffers when he's not there for whatever reason. United's problems run deeper than that, we know. I think a big problem is that they have Rashford, who is still a teenager, and Ibrahimovic, who's very much at the end of his career. You need someone in the middle.
Anthony Martial. Why would he be a central?
If he's a central striker, but another part of the problem is that Mourinho, you know, we were talking about Pochettino not making his non-starters feel valued. Mm. Mourinho is the absolute king of that.
Yeah.
And so whenever any of these players come in, they look utterly bereft of confidence. Ferguson was so good at rotating one or two players each week, and when they came in, they seemed to just hit the ground running. Mm. Mourinho doesn't seem to do that. He seems to ignore you if you're not one of his chosen untouchables. And Martial, in particular, looks an absolute shadow of the player that was terrorised the Premier League at times last year.
Relevant to what you're saying, Liam, Mourinho launched a frankly scathing attack on Luke Shaw last night, James, saying he's nowhere near the level to be compared to Ashley Young and Matteo Darmian and Daley Blind, which just seems wrong. He's an England international.
Yeah, I think he was quite scathing about the whole England international thing. I think he used that for a little dig on Joe Hart as well,
yes.
Mourinho. I mean, there's, you know, with Martial as well, that's £80 million worth of talent down the toilet because Mourinho doesn't fancy them. I don't know Luke Shaw. I don't think when I've seen him play this season and last season, of course, inevitably, he's not been the same player he was since he had his leg broken horrifically. But, I mean, give the guy... The guy's not even getting a chance to prove Mourinho wrong.
Mourinho seems to doubt his commitment, though. His commitment and his work ethic. Do you think that's... I mean, it's hard to know for sure, but...
It's so hard when you see this evidence base of players of whom Mourinho doubts their work ethic and commitment, and they seem to prove their work ethic and commitment the moment they're away from him. Mm. And it's a who's who of top international and Premier League talent.
Yeah.
Kevin De Bruyne, Romelu Lukaku, Juan Mata. And, you know, I suspect next season when he's at West Ham or wherever, Luke Shaw, you know, I've got a huge amount of sympathy with Shaw and none with Mourinho because it feels to me like Shaw's being victimised and picked on because Mourinho likes to have someone to pick on.
The myth of Mourinho, the master manager, died long ago, I think. There's a long enough track record of him misjudging talent and in particular misjudging the character of talent. I've been quite vocal in recent days saying that Chelsea should definitely take another look at Luke Shaw this summer because they know better than anyone that Mourinho's assessment can't be taken
look
at face
at Eden
value.
Hazard this season versus
well,
net,
yeah,
last.
And you go back to De Bruyne and Lukaku, they've been stung by it before, you know, so... Luke Shaw is someone that they've had a couple of near misses with already.
Isn't he a massive Chelsea fan?
He grew up a Chelsea fan. I mean, I don't know how much that really counts for anything in professional football, but they were certainly interested when he was leaving Southampton. They just weren't willing to match what United were trying to pay. He was actually nearly went to Chelsea's academy as a kid. So they've had a couple of near misses. I think he would be a long-term upgrade on Alonso if he is still the player that he can be. And, you know, the double leg break, we're still only 18 months removed from that. And if you remember Aaron Ramsey's career, it took him 2 years because it's not just the physical rehabilitation, it's the confidence thing. And Mourinho is definitely not the manager to help with that stage of the recovery.
Yeah, focusing on the game itself.
Please don't.
Why not?
It's horrible.
West Brom are so well drilled.
Oh, West Brom, yeah. If we're talking about West Brom, I'm totally happy. I don't want to talk about Man United anymore.
All right, well, let's talk about West Brom. Man United had 18 shots. They're only 3 on target. West Brom, I mean, essentially the season's over for them.
I read a very interesting, I can't remember where it was, but I read a very interesting piece about Tony Pulis about how intelligent they are, where they shoot and where they let the opposition shoot.
Yeah.
And yeah, Man United had 18 shots, but they were rubbish shots.
Exactly.
Because that's what they force you to do. It was the same at Arsenal, wasn't it? 80% possession odd for Arsenal and they got 2 shots on target because West Brom are so good at letting you go down the channels and letting you force yourself into pinging in across where you've got a 20% chance of winning a header against Evans and company. And then if you do get a shot away, Ben Foster's a very good goalkeeper. Yeah, they're fantastic. I think the only thing that was missing from their performance was getting the last ball right as they did against Arsenal and a bit of helpful defending at set places, set pieces. I know that they're a bit boring now because they're definitely going to finish 8th, but much love for West Brom.
Yeah, well, they face Watford next, Liam, and it's all irrelevant for them. It has been for about 5 or 6 games now. They're not going to get a European spot. They're not going to get relegated. There's a bit of Premier League bonus action, I suppose. Maybe the players are playing for that, but they just seem to be happy enough, cruising along, get big scalps here and there. I mean, it's... Pulis is just a wonderful manager, isn't he? He's wonderful.
Wonderful man.
Yeah, wonderful man.
I think the most remarkable part of West Brom's season has been this part, because if you look back at Pulis's career, his teams generally fade once survival is guaranteed. You know, that is the only priority, and once that happens, they essentially sort of phone in the rest of the season. Yeah. He's done really well to keep them motivated. They deserve an awful lot of credit for the way they've approached these games. And no one ever has an easy game against West Brom, ever. Yeah.
No, I can imagine. I'd hate to play against West Brom. Let's quickly go through the rest of the fixtures. Hull 2, West Ham 1. This is an excellent relegation battle. It's really shaping up nicely. Hull are now 18th. They came back from behind to beat West Ham. And the next game for them is Middlesbrough at home in midweek. Win that, and there's a serious chance Marco Silva might have pulled off the most improbable sort of redemption
ever. Amazing, and so much of the credit goes to him. on Saturday, it was his change bringing on Grzycki that changed the game. And that, I think he went 4-2-4, you know, really noticed that, hey, West Ham are rubbish at defence. Pinned them back, got a well-deserved win. The Robertson goal, by the way, if you ever want to see how not to defend a football game, you just see this, like, there's a left back just steaming through. No one's tracking him. No, they're like, oh, let's let him go, see what he gets up to. And he just taps home. Just to say on West Ham, I think they're now a dark horse to get relegated.
What?
Yeah, they are only 6-7 points clear.
Yeah. If you look at the table, they're definitely in the conversation.
And they are falling like a stone.
Interesting.
And I think they could, you know, obviously they've got, Bilic has got the public support of the board, but, you know, we'll see how long that lasts if they lose a couple more games. I don't trust that defence. Winston Reid might not be back for a while. Mm. They've got no Ogbonna for the rest of the season. So you're talking at least one of Font or Collins playing. Mm. By the way, they've ruined Jose Font. Don't know what's happened there. And then two of their collection of dreadful fullbacks. Mm. Put all that together, that's a relegation defence. So
if that turns out to be true, that is one of the most unbelievable shouts.
It's the worst stadium migration in history.
The worst in history, although it'll be cheaper next season for them. Leicester 2, Stoke 0, and 4 on the bounce now for Shakespeare City. Is it the coach who's turned everything around, or it's a bit obvious that the players just didn't fancy playing for Ranieri for whatever reason. We don't know, it might not be, you know, something untowards. And now they clearly do fancy playing for Craig Shakespeare, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm loath to judge him as a manager based on this really short sample size. He's obviously had great success in large part due to not being Ranieri. Mm-hmm. But what I think the challenge he'll face in the longer term is that, especially coming from a situation where he's the assistant manager, mm-hmm. you know, they all call him shaky. He's supposed to be the really approachable guy. He was the good cop to Ranieri's bad cop. Mm. Now he has to be the bad cop. He can't be their friend anymore. He has to be the manager. And at some point, that's going to dawn on both sides of that relationship. Mm. And then I think the real tell of how successful Leicester will be is whether both sides can cope with that and whether the relationship endures.
Yeah, Wilfred Ndidi has been excellent since joining the club, but he was really good against West Ham. Since his debut, he's won the most aerial duels, most tackles, and the second most interceptions at the club. He's not quite Kante, but he's.
I knew you were going to use the K word.
But he's not quite Kante, but he's good enough in a midfield too for Leicester's purpose.
He's not quite Kante, but he's very, very good. Yeah. You know, he's got kind of all those Kante-ish attributes. I feel really bad because he's going to get... I don't want to compare him to Kante, but what else he's supposed
inevitable.
To do? What else he's supposed to do? Really good muscular physical presence. And unlike Kante, he wins his headers as well because he's a giant at the moment. He's a
big lad.
Big fan of Ndidi.
Leicester at Sunderland next. 3 more points, Liam. Job done.
Should be. Yep.
Okay, cool. Good to hear it. Swansea 0, Middlesbrough 0. Oh, this was a game to watch. Both these teams are going to need to start attacking soon, Liam. They can't. Neither of them can score. Paul Clement's done amazing to bring that defensive solidity to Swansea. Mm. Middlesbrough have looked fairly defensively solid all season, but again, neither of these teams are getting goals.
Yeah, I don't see where they're going to come from with regards to Middlesbrough. Swansea clearly could point to the absence of Fernando Llorente. Mm. And I think a key determining factor in whether they actually stay up and complete this recovery is how long he's out for. Mm. They need him back as soon as possible. I love watching Gylfi Sigurdsson every single time I see
him play.
He's a fantastic player. And he almost scored a brilliant goal. It was a little step over away from a defender and curled the ball into the top corner. And then... right at the end of the game, there was this amazing Alvaro Negredo cross. I don't know if you saw it, the outside of his left foot.
Which he did a Travella cross.
It was incredible. I don't know what he did to Rudy Gestede after the game because he had to score that. Mm. He had to score it. He missed it when it was easier.
They bought Rudy Gestede. I mean,
for that moment, for that moment, a far post header.
It's a dramatic lack of ambition if you're spending money on really Gestede.
Yeah. Well, you buy championship players. I mean, you end up with, in
I'm
the championship.
I'm not even sure he's a championship player.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure he's a League One player. He's just tall.
He's just tall. What one player who's fun to watch is Adama Traore. He completed 12 take-ons against Swansea. Second time this season he's done more than 10 in a single game.
What I love about Adama Traore is people always say La Masia graduate, Adama Traore, and you look at him and you go, Oh, I can see why they were so keen to move you on, because you are the least Barcelona player in world football.
He's
really fast, but you actually can't play football.
But generally, La Masia graduates are noted for their game intelligence. Mm-hmm. He has zero game intelligence. It's literally his game plan is give me the ball and I'll beat three men, see what happens.
He's like one of those toys that you wind up at the back and then you just point it in a direction and it goes. And you can't stop it going.
Yeah.
But it gets to the end of it's you know...
It's the skirting board.
And it... There you go. There's nothing coming from it. But Amatriore completed 12 take-ons. Did any of them even create a chance?
No. His hair was fantastic, though. That's Did you see it? Mm. Bleach blonde dreads. He looks amazing. Well done, Adama. Southampton 0, Bournemouth 0. Without Gabbiadini, Southampton just looked devoid of any threat, really. They completely dominated Bournemouth, but they couldn't put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, well, they had Shane Long.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gabbiadini's been great since he's arrived, but it's amazing how quickly Southampton have become reliant on him. I think, to be fair, they're also missing Charlie Austin.
Yeah.
Don't know when he's due back. I guess we might not even see him this season. But yeah, I think without a striker to put the ball in the net, I think their shortcomings are really apparent. They've got a great defence, though. I thought Jack Stevens was really good.
Yeah. Saints fans love Shane Long, but he doesn't score goals. They love, whenever he comes on, they go crazy for him because he runs a lot.
He's one of the hardest working players, let alone strikers in the Premier League. Mm. He will chase every lost cause. But I think Southampton, ever since the start of the season, have had a lot of problems replacing Pella and Mane. Mm. Not just because of what they gave in terms of goals, but their other creators, players like Tadic and Ward-Prowse, have actually become lesser because they don't have... Pella, a really underrated skill of him, was bringing other people into play. He was a really intelligent target man. Mane, the threat in behind, was great for the other players they had. Redmond hasn't quite been able to remedy that, and he's never been he might mature into a capable, consistent goal scorer at Premier League level, but he's not quite there yet.
Yeah, seems more like a sort of Lallana-type drifty player right now. Watford 1, Sunderland 0. Weird story this morning. Moyes, apparently, there's a Daily Star exclusive. Apparently, Moyes threatened Vicky Sparks, a Match the Day reporter, with a slap. It sounds like it was tongue in cheek, but it's quite inappropriate and a bit cringe. Yeah. He's apologised, but a bit weird.
It's a really dreadful thing for a manager, the figurehead of a football club, to be doing. It doesn't reflect well on Sunderland. It doesn't reflect well on David Moyes.
Even in jest.
Exactly. What sort? You know, who do you think you are to be making a sort of joke like that? It's an awful thing. It makes your skin crawl.
Yeah.
It's horrible. I don't really have much more to say on it other than it reminds you that there's still so many problems with the way that this very masculine environment of football, and you go to a match, there's so few women you'll see in and around the sort of tunnels, and I know that's improving, but I think the major issue is that, you know, if I were a woman, I'm not sure I'd really want to be around that, the environment that you get at some top level football clubs. Some, like, not all, and I know that most clubs, or every club I know in the Premier League, is working really hard to change that, but
still a bit old boys club.
It's very old boys club, and there's work to be done.
Yeah.
Moyes just has a really bad habit of shooting himself in the foot, and sometimes it's on a relatively trivial footballing level, and this is clearly worse. It's the kind of story that could snowball into something bigger. It's Sunderland are having a bad enough season as it is without this kind of thing happening.
Well, they lost 1-0. They're definitely going down. Moyes will probably get the sack.
I don't know, because there have been stories in recent weeks that they'll stick with him. I mean, Ellis Short waited a long time. The public line coming out of the club at the time was that this was the manager he'd wanted for several years. So if he's going to be consistent with that, part of me feels like Sunderland just kind of need to let the ship sink.
Yeah, they need to rebuild.
They've been throwing water out in really small buckets for years and just about staying above the waterline, but I think maybe they do need to go down.
Do you back David Moyes to go down to the Championship, rebuild? There's a lot to do there.
He's not a dreadful manager, and there's only so much you can do with a squad like his, especially if one of the things you're going to do with a squad like his is bring in all the Everton players. Yeah, I think it'd be really good for Sunderland actually to go down for the City. It's just going to surely be a lot more enjoyable rather than the sort of never-ending string of heart attacks you have in March, April and May over whether your team will stay up just to go down and win things. I mean, they're clearly they'd be the biggest team in the division if they get relegated. They've still got enough financial heft. I think they could do with finding a new owner because Ellis Short, he's backed the club to an extent, but there's not the money there.
It's not the interest either. He's lost interest.
Yeah. But I think maybe a bit of excitement down in the Championship. It's got to beat this. This kind of never-ending stream of defeats. And
it's done a hell of a job for Newcastle.
Yeah, exactly, hasn't it? I think they'll look over at Newcastle and think, quite fancy some of that, really. Mm. Don't give me another year of battling relegation.
Liam, quick word on Watford.
Watford? I think they're just...
They're the most forgettable club in the league this season, yeah, 100%.
There's been no dominant narrative to this season other than they just get results whenever they need to, often in unspectacular fashion, but they are a gritty... I think they're the oldest team in the league. They play like very wily, experienced operators. They're quite a physical team as well. And they can usually grind out a 1-0 win or a close win whenever they need it. They'll be fine.
Do you think anything will change for them anytime soon? It just looks like they're just caught in
a... manager might change.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, if Kike Sanchez-Flores wasn't doing well enough, I'm not sure Walter Mazzarri will. Or Alec Baldwin doing an impression of Walter Mazzarri, which is what it seemed like of late.
Alec Baldwin in his latest role as an Italian Premier League manager.
He's been great in it. Yeah. He's great in everything he does, Alec Baldwin.
Have you seen that there's a new film out soon called Baby Boss? Yeah.
I was like, this looks dreadful.
It looks awful.
And then at the end, you see Alec Baldwin is Baby Boss, and you go, when's it open?
Alec Baldwin. Yeah. I think it's this week.
Yeah, I'm going.
It's open.
Alec Baldwin.
CGI film with a baby that's voiced by Alec Baldwin.
I loved him in Team America. So.
Yeah, his best role. cool. Well, that's all we've got time for. More Alec Baldwin chat on the Friday Squawker Talker with Greg Johnson. Thanks very much to our guests, Liam Toomey from ESPN FC and James Benjett from the London Evening Standard. Please subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, and we'll see you very, very soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.